Hello, and you're listening to EcoJustice Radio from the 90.7 KPFK studios in Los Angeles, California. Our show is brought to you by SoCal 350 Climate Action, presenting environmental and climate stories from a social justice frame, featuring voices not necessarily heard on traditional, mainstream, or even public media outlets. My name is Jessica Aldridge, and today Carrie Kim will be talking to Gloria Arellanes of the Tongva Native Nation of Los Angeles, who has over 50 years of experience as an activist and community health advocate. She is a celebrated figure of early Chicana feminist nationalism in the U.S. and remains committed to the struggles of preservation of sacred sites and cultural education for indigenous peoples. She is a grandmother wisdom keeper of the Morningstar Foundation, dedicated to sustaining indigenous ways of life through cross-cultural spiritual practices and education. We are glad you could all join us today for this interview. You are listening to EcoJustice Radio. Aloha. My name is Carrie Kim, and we're here with Grandmother Gloria Arellanes, elder of the Tongva Nation and a long-standing activist for social justice and indigenous movements. Thank you so much for joining us on the show tonight, Grandmother. This time it is so beneficial for all of us to hear the words of elders.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this, and I feel very honored to be on tonight. Thank you.
We welcome you to share anything you would like to share in your native language to invoke the interview.
Niha avaha notoko tomba netwaim tasarasunhavut. What I have just said is I've welcomed and greeted anybody listening tonight, and introducing myself as a Tongva woman, and my traditional name, which is Spirit Blanket. And, you know, I'm just very happy to be here tonight.
Thank you.
And I thought I'd start with, you know, kind of just historically explaining who the Tongva are. This is a very short lesson, okay?
Yes.
Because there's so much to any culture. But Tongva people, and by the way, they didn't have one chief, one nation.
Mm-hmm.
We had many villages, and each village had their own council, their own chief,
mm-hmm.
and some even had their own dialect mm. within the nation. Over the years, because with the colonizers, we were given the name Gabardino, which is for the San Gabriel Mission,
mm-hmm.
That kind of became the center, even though each village, like Yagna in Los Angeles, or even here where I live in El Monte, it's Sauna, we still have those names, and we were very blessed to find those names because they try to wipe us out and erase us. And, you know, there was that saying, kill the Indian, save the man.
Mm.
So they took a lot of our children, cut their hair, took their language, didn't let us pray the way we were accustomed to praying for thousands of years. And our language was taken away. We were not supposed to dance or do ceremony. We had to dress in clothing from our necks down to our ankles, which when we were accustomed to living in beautiful climate
mm-hmm.
and not having to dress
mm-hmm.
with a lot of clothing, mm-hmm. as do many cultures. And they just thought we were barbaric. And those words are still up on the mission doors in tiles. That in 1711, Father Geronimo Boscana came to this area to civilize the barbaric Indians. And I took my children to see that so that they could know historically how we were looked at. And, you know, I grew up with a mom who said, don't ever say you're an Indian. You are Mexican. So I was very confused when I grew up, but that was her way of protecting me. And I was to learn that as I became an adult and started understanding my own history, personal history and culture. But, you know, it was very hard for the when the missions were established, how we were treated. We were forbidden to do many of the things of our culture because they were trying to kill the Indian and save men.
Mm.
A lot of our people ran away from the missions, and the punishment was if you ran away and were caught by the Spanish soldiers, your foot was cut off.
Oh, my God. I have not heard that story.
We grew up in a very barbaric, they were the barbarians.
Mm.
And they were the, you know, violent, beating us, forbidding us to do anything, locking us up in certain quarters. And we were not accustomed to living like that. And plus, they got disease.
Sure.
We had no diseases, and we didn't have the immunities to protect ourselves from measles and venereal disease. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of raping of the women, the beating of everybody, you know, into submission. And so that's what we grew up with, and that is a trauma that we carry. I realized that trauma one day as I was reading a book by Deborah Miranda.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote about the missions, bad Indians.
Mm.
And there was one chapter that just, I just broke down in tears. Right now my hair is just standing up on my arms. I broke down in tears because she was explaining, she went into detail that her father was getting ready to, she could hear him pulling his pants, his belt out of his pant loops.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew that her younger brother was going to get a beating. And then what she did was connect it to the beatings that we received in the missions.
Mm.
And it's a trauma that we carried. And it really just affected me so strongly because,
a certain kind
of I know with my own children, I use what we call the chancla. You know? But it gave me this reality like a slap that, oh my gosh, I never saw it that way. But yes, I can understand that now.
You mean learning the ways, kind of the colonizers' ways being passed on as a trauma that continues?
It was so violent, and that it's come down over the generations, you know, because why would we want to use a twig? I've heard of twigs. I've heard of sticks being used on children to spank them, belts. You know, of course, now, you know, there's such a thing as child abuse reporting.
Right.
And, you know, but I could say in my time and growing up, I was spanked with wooden hangers, a stick.
So what do you feel, Grandmother, knowing that this trauma exists, this kind of intergenerational trauma that continues and it's kind of perpetuating itself? What do you feel is really the key to break the cycle of trauma?
Well, number one, becoming aware of where it came from, like me, just discovering maybe about 3 months ago when I was hospitalized, I was reading the book, and it just affected me so deeply to understand and to accept that explanation that it carried on, and this is how people felt they had to discipline their children. You know, we were raised with the idea that villages raised children. Children could walk among adults, but they weren't allowed to speak while adults were speaking. But, you know, everybody took care of the child. You know,
sure.
It was family.
Yeah, like a village, village consciousness.
You know, and there were no beatings. There were no belts to beat. I don't remember reading anything about twigs and beating of children. It was always the opportunity to teach a child with words, you know, what was good in life. You know, everybody had to work towards gathering food. Everybody had to, you know, share, you know, ceremonies to celebrate life and love and, you know, family.
Right.
You know, and then when the colonizers came, you know, it just changed, and it was violent. It was brutal.
Well,
it was genocide.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and then the raping of women and forcing them to live in tight quarters, and then the disease taking so many people, you know, just with measles alone.
Well, when you talked about the way your mother raised you to consider yourself or identify yourself more as Mexican versus Native, I mean, what was it that really primed you to want to reconnect to your Native heritage? What was the key moment, or how did that arise?
As a child, I remember coming home and telling my dad, "Hey, Dad, they tell me I'm an American at school," and I must have been in fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, "No, you're not an American. You're a Chicano."
Uh-huh.
And I go, "No, Dad, they said I'm an American." And he goes, "No, you know, you're our Chicano."
Mm-hmm.
And so you get kind of, you know, I remember crying. I was crying, "No, they tell me it's American," you know.
Uh-huh.
And then in my 20s, my mom tells me, because I went to visit one of her cousins, and she showed me all this genealogy, an uncle who wrote books, you know, and told me all this information. And she said, "We're Indians." So I came home, and I said, "Mom, I went to visit so-and-so, and she said that we are Indians."
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, don't ever say you are an Indian. You are Mexican. So at that point, I was very confused, but then I started to believe I was Mexican, and I am part Mexican.
Right.
And I have no shame about that. I'm very proud of all my culture. And I went into the Chicano movement for that reason.
Well,
you know? And also when I was in high school, I have to say that I went through race riots. In the city that I still live in, you know, it was we were not the dominant race. There was more whites here in El Monte.
Right.
This
is
the end of the Santa Fe Trail. We had the Monte Boys, which is a vigilante group, and there was a story of the lynching of Juana Maria. And I've never been able to find that story, but I heard it over and over, and. You know, there was things here, even when my mother and father came out here from East L.A., we lived in the projects there in East L.A., Maravilla Projects, and we came out here to El Monte, a brand-new house, housing tract, and my dad was very light-skinned, and my mother was very dark-skinned because she was a native.
Right.
And he took care of everything on his GI benefits. And I had, all I remember her telling me is, you know, we had a lot of trouble when we bought this house. They tried to take it from your father. But she didn't give me details.
Right.
And it took me up until about 5 years ago to realize there was a law here after getting involved with a group called the El Monte, South El Monte Arts and Posse organization. There's another name to it. Where they were looking at the history of El Monte, because everything was east of east, east of east, Los Angeles, east of Los L.A., period.
Well, because...
And they, Go ahead.
Well, because you were so heavily involved with the Chicano Chicana movement here, do you identify with both, for example, Los Angeles or Los Angeles and Yagna both at the same time? You know, is that...
Well, I'm very blessed in this uncle that wrote books, and he wrote letters to one of my cousins, and she gave me copies of all these letters, where he identified, his name was Arnold Rojas. She wrote to him saying, are we Mexican / Spaniard?
Right.
And he said, no, you're Capulino / Asucta. Asucta is present-day Azusa, but it identified our village was Azusagda, the place of the grandmother.
Okay.
So that's, I know where my family roots are.
Well, you've mentioned that you wanted to comment on what it's like being someone who's from a First Nation or Indigenous and living in a city. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that. You know, what is it like not having, as you said, a land base? But yet you're here, well, and this is your ancestral lands.
You know, we experienced as a nation, and a nation that was really growing to know itself because almost everything was wiped out. But as we kept, you know, looking and looking, we found language. We found, you know, things, how our regalia looked like. We found some of our creation stories and songs and language. And so it's been the last 10 years I've seen that we've become very strong. But at one time, we just were like lost and were borrowing, you know, identity of other tribes, I guess, you know, wanting to look like a Lakota, let's say, you know, with the leather and the fringe, you know. But I really feel confident that we have found that culture that was lost. And I always tell people, you know, they try to erase us, but we're like seeds.
Yeah.
We'll never go away.
Yeah, absolutely.
We've already planted those seeds for all the next generations.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to EcoJustice Radio, coming to you from the KPFK studios in Los Angeles.
You've also mentioned that, you know, because of the rate of development here and because there is a lot of concrete, there's sacred sites and there's so much concrete and development here and increasingly so, you know, how is it that you remember the sacred? Because you commented that it is, you know, some people forget being here.
Yes. Well, people come to Los Angeles and it's got Hollywood and it's got Hollywood Boulevard and, you know, it's got all this so-called glitz and glamour, which I think is insanity because it's nothing but concrete and traffic to me,
sure.
and toxins.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always remind people whenever I speak at a rally or open up something with a prayer, I always remind them, you are on Tongva land, which was the Los Angeles Basin, for the Channel Islands, parts of San Bernardino, Riverside, and Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and in those Orange County kind of wetlands and the coastal areas, it's shared sites between the Ahashimin and the Tongva.
Right.
Okay, it's not one or the others, but it's a shared site.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a lot of sacred sites down there in those areas because of the ocean, which was, you know, all waters were sacred to us. All land was sacred to us. And I worked with both the Chica in trying to bring back the culture there, you know, and I was able to read some of the archaeological books of the findings there. And I learned a lot because I did not know so much that was documented. Now, given it's coming from an archaeologist, okay, because the stories that our elders were able to pass down to us were not much. You know,
yes.
And I don't like to rely on academia. You know, books will give you information, but how does that person know? You know, to me, the knowledge has to come from the ancestors. So I would sit with elders. I was told when you sit with the elders, you don't question. You don't ask anything. You listen and you'll learn. And I did. And I'm the kind, I have a child kind of curiosity. I want, how come, why? You know, I want to poke at it. You know,
yes.
How come it does this? You know, why do you do this? And so I did learn. And so I know nowadays we've lost that ability, or the young people don't know how to sit and listen. They want it now. They want fast food. They want, you know, everything's fast.
How to change that?
Go ahead.
How to change that, or how to address it in a technological world when people are used to just Googling and looking things up themselves and they think they know?
You try to find the information and put it there. If that's the only resource we have to reach, you know, people, then you put those stories there and that knowledge, whatever you can remember, whatever, you know. I feel I get my words from the Creator and the spirits. Okay, I feel I never prepare any speeches or any talks. They just, the words are given to me.
Do you feel that the young...
Believe me. Go ahead.
Do you feel that the young people are open to learning how to connect in that way, or that they can even get quiet enough to connect in that way? Do you see that?
I think I have met many young people, and I love to mentor young people because, you know, they're our next leaders. They're our next, you know, elders. And so you want them to know the right thing. And too many of them say, well, I read this book. And, well, that's good. You know, I read that book too. But I want to tell you what I learned from my elders. Okay. And you have to go to the sacred sites. You have to go to the lands where we have burials there. You have to feel, learn how to feel those ancestors. And they do talk to you and they will touch you. You know, and you also feel their pain, what they went through, you know, because they've been disturbed and reburied and not allowed to go on to their journey. Just at, like at Long Beach, Cal State, there was one ancestor that was pulled up when they were building a parking lot there. And they pulled up half of his remains. They buried him on the other side. They never put him back together.
So how?
To me, he can never travel on. He's stuck here.
So did anyone try to restore, to address that and have the bones be repatriated properly?
You know, I'm sure they did. That was back in the 70s. You know, people never took us serious. They didn't see us. I mean, the books, at one time they said we were extinct. You know, which is not true.
Right.
But I know there was a large Native American student association and an alumni group that, you know, tried to get that, you know, whole body put intact. But it just, I mean, you have developers working on it. I don't know if there was monitors at that site overseeing anything that was, you know, pulled up.
Right. Well, speaking about land, you know, when you say, I mean, you've mentioned that land is vital to our existence and also obviously to our spiritual sustenance and cultural inheritance. So people are forgetting the importance of land and being connected to land, and that's both settlers and also Native peoples. So I'm wondering how you, or if you believe that this umbilical cord to the land can be reconnected.
You know, it can to a degree. I mean, and it I see the change that has happened over the years. But at one time, people just didn't even realize there was Indians in Los Angeles. Or they called us Hollywood Indians, you know. I mean, we experienced racism and, you know, hostility from tribes. Mm-hmm. You know, like the ones back east, we'd go to different conferences and, they're from L.A., you know, and they'd come up as buenos dias.
Oh, that
you know,
condescending.
Like, we're Mexican. Uh-huh. That was the innuendo.
The insulting.
You know, most everybody is Heinz 57, a little mixed, mm-hmm. you know, some of this, some of that, you know.
Yes.
There's very few pure 100% Native people left. Very few.
You've mentioned
in Los Angeles.
You've mentioned
but
that
the land to mm-hmm. us is the most important thing. But we're not federally recognized. We are state recognized. Therefore, we don't come from a res.
Mm-hmm.
But we have our sacred sites that we fought for, like Pavuna, and we have one. Boca Chica, we mm-hmm. have one.
Mm-hmm.
Cerritos, unfortunately, we're losing that part. Mm-hmm. You know, because of the oil extraction increasing. Over a known earthquake fault line,
they will
increase the amount of barrels, and under the guise of restoration.
Mm-hmm.
So they get 40 years to do that reservation. Guess what? We already know we only have 12 years for Mother Earth
right.
to start changing.
Yeah, exactly.
We know the sea is rising, and Cerritos is going to be underwater at some point.
This
is a coastal area.
Can you share? I know there's an upcoming prayer vigil, the healing walk that's happening for Los Cerritos. We want to share with the listeners about that event.
On February 16th, there will be a prayer walk, kind of a vigil, you
mm-hmm.
know,
mm-hmm.
just to walk to the route has not been decided yet. They will gather at Pavuna at 9 a.m.
Okay, and that's February 16th.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, it's a prayer walk. What they're trying to do is, at first they were going to go down PCH. Well, I can't go down PCH because
right.
you can't block the walkways,
yes.
the sidewalks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's so many cars down there, so much traffic, and I'm in a wheelchair currently.
Right.
And I'm not going to go down the street in a wheelchair.
Yeah, none is advisable, no.
Every morning I hear about people getting run over, and I'm not going to expose myself that way. You know, I have better ideas how to pass on into the next world,
yes.
But not in the street.
So I'm
just kind of doing it from behind. So what I'm trying to get him to do is like what we do for what Rebecca Robles does for the Ancestor Walk is a caravan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drive to the site, get off, do your prayer, lay down your medicine, sing some songs, and get off of prayer.
And go on.
You know, touching the land is so much more significant.
So healing people
you
need
know,
to.
to feel, just to feel and to, you know, see what's there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like several wetlands. There's Cerritos, there's Boca Chica, there's Bayona Wetland,
mm-hmm.
and let's see, there's one more. Oh, the other side of Boca Chica, both sides, they need prayer. They need prayer. We have ancestors reburied there.
Absolutely.
Pavuna also is, you know, a sacred site.
For everyone that actually
needs the prayers.
Everyone needs the prayers who lives here, period, whether you're settler or native.
I agree.
And, you know, how can they find out more about the event? You have a event page, or where should they look for?
There's no event page. I think they were trying to do a very quiet kind of just a simple prayer kind
uh-huh.
of is taking, you know, more of a site, you know, where you're not going to the sites. And I think we need to fill those sites.
Mm-hmm.
I think people need to walk upon the land and fill it. And you know, when I take young people out there, I give them medicine. I tell them, okay, go walking around. Come back and tell me what you feel.
Right.
And they come back very sad. They say, I feel a lot of pain.
Sure. Well,
and, you know, that's the ancestors.
Hmm. Well, there's no way to shortcut that part. That's part of the empowerment.
That, you know, people need to learn how to do that and to use those sacred sites because there's very little open space in the Los Angeles area.
And less and less by
communities.
Day.
You know, I mean, especially if you go near the ocean, everybody wants a beachfront house,
mm-hmm.
you know, and is willing to pay, you know, oodles of money for it.
Well, what do you know, do when you have nature, when you have the loss of wild places, there's no wild spaces left,
mm-hmm.
and what you have left is curated environments. You know, everything's manicured. Everything has kind of got this falsity to it.
Yes. And not only that, because we do have a lot of wildlife that is coming down because of fires, because of hunger and water. They're in the cities in where I live here. Mm. They're warning. I saw one run down the street, and I've never seen a coyote.
Oh, urban coyotes, yeah.
Coyote. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And so now they're saying, yes, there are several coyotes. Mm-hmm. Well, they're coming from the wash that is about a mile away from here. And, you know, they're looking for food.
Yeah. Yeah, well, everyone's habitat is being squeezed. Every
Absolutely.
Single being's
Absolutely.
Habitat's being squeezed.
And then, you know, I go back to people and to talk about protocols. I know you asked me a question about mm-hmm. protocols, and I want to just touch upon that. You know, there's ways to approach elders, to approach people of nations, you know. What I find is people want, they always want, and they just don't know how to do it in the proper way.
In an honoring.
And our traditional way is, you know, I would like you to do a prayer. I offer tobacco to you. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's just as simple as a packet of tobacco. It could be in a prayer bead.
Mm-hmm.
It can be in a bandana. You know,
right.
I even do that when I ask somebody to do something. I always give a bandana
mm-hmm.
and I give them medicine.
Yes.
And, you know, and you're supposed to take that and pray upon it and make a decision, yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so I usually know how I'm going to answer. And so I usually accept it and tell them, yes, I will do that.
Right.
And, you know, just coming in respect for our land and realizing every time you open up a sweat lodge in our land, I don't know if my ancestors recognize who you are.
Right.
Because you're talking a different language and you're mm-hmm. talking a different way of doing things. And, you know, I'm sorry, but I've heard of people doing things in the sweat lodges with New Age
mm-hmm.
Kinds of things, candles, you know, just different things, you know,
right.
that are not familiar to the spirit.
The ancestors here. Yeah, doing things kind of unilaterally or thinking there's
yes.
some kind of entitlement to be able to do things without asking any permission of anyone.
Right, right.
Including the ancestors, like, especially the yeah. ancestors.
Though. Right. And I know people are learning slowly, you know, mm-hmm. to recognize the people of the land, you know. I think it was Kelly Caballero, one of our young ladies, the first women's march that was held in LA in Los Angeles. They told us to go, and then when we got there, they said, no, we don't have your schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I mean, it was ugly.
Right.
And she wrote this piece that I just loved. She says, you march on our lands, you let us pray.
Right.
First.
Yeah. Yes.
And so, you know, that's always been the thing. But I always try to remember, to remind people.
And especially
standing here in what was called the village of Yagna,
mm-hmm.
underneath all this concrete, all this noise, all these toxins, is my people's burial and their villages.
Yes, and there are sacred lands
here. Every day, so walk in a good way and pick up your trash.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
You know,
grandmother, is there a meaning for Yagna? Is there a meaning for the name
Yagna?
Yagna? Uh huh.
I don't know what that one means.
Mm-hmm.
I
just was wondering.
You know, today I was working on finding what the names of all the wetlands were, and they were all one land at one time, and that's Maturi Chegna.
Hmm.
And I was trying to find, because I found two different spellings, so I was trying to decide which was the better spelling, you know. And it means a place of the louse. Not very romantic.
Well, grandmother, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight to share your wisdom, your lived wisdom. We are so grateful that you've been on the show with us. And we're wondering how listeners can connect with you or learn more about the Tongva peoples. How can they further what we've begun here?
Well, I am on that monster Facebook. I do use some technology. Mm-hmm. I'm not good at it, though.
Right.
Boy, am I bad at it. But I'm on Facebook.
So Gloria Arianes.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do go out to a lot of events. I'm being very selective about what I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm more into the sacred sites and prayer, you know, mm-hmm. and just I'm trying to stay away from negative energy right now. So I choose what I find is more beneficial.
Well,
there are just some issues that I'm very, very dedicated to.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, because your presence is absolutely important to everyone, especially all the people who live here, to be able to remember, and also for you to pass on the wisdom so that it also gets propagated on down the lines of future generations.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you so much, Grandmother. We look forward to seeing you at the prayer vigil for Los Rios Wetlands soon.
You've been listening to EcoJustice Radio, brought to you by SoCal 350 and 90.7 KPFK. The show can be found on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and SoCal350.org. Created by Mark and JP Morris, executive producer Jack Eit, engineer Blake Lampkin, interview hosted by Carrie Kim, and original music by Javier Cadre. And until next time, remember, the power is yours.